Hi, everyone. Welcome to Season 7 of the Big Unlock podcast. A very warm welcome to all our listeners. My name is Ritu M. Oberoi, and I'm the managing partner here at BigRio and Demo, and I'll be your host today for the Big Unlock podcast. Today, we are very excited to welcome Julie Demery to our podcast. Julie is the VP and Chief Technology and Digital Innovation at St. Mary's Healthcare, where she's leading one of the more thoughtful and pragmatic digital transformation efforts in rural healthcare. A former physician assistant turned informatics and innovation executive, she brings a uniquely clinician-centered perspective to technology adoption, focused less on hype and more on solving real workflow safety and patient access problems. I think what makes her perspective especially compelling is her belief that innovation in healthcare is ultimately about culture, governance, and community, and not just technology. So a very warm welcome to you, Julie, to our Big Unlock podcast. And we're really happy to have you here with us today.
I'm excited to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Would you like to add anything to the introduction I prepared for you?
No, that's lovely. Thank you so much.
Thank you. So let's start by you telling us a little bit more about St. Mary's Healthcare, the communities you serve, the patient population, and what makes your organization distinct as an independent rural safety net system.
Sure. So as you said, St. Mary's is a rural hospital in Amsterdam, New York. We serve patients across two counties. We have about 400,000 patient visits a year. St. Mary's has a really special mission. We were founded by the Sisters of St. Joseph of Carondelet in 1905. And our mission is printed on our walls and felt by the patients and employees who work here every day, with a very strong mission to serve the poor and vulnerable. So that's something that is very clear. And like I said, it's really something that you feel when you get hired here, and something that felt really personal when I came here. We have inpatient and outpatient services, a number of practices. We do surgery. We have an ER. We have a nursing home. It's a great place to work.
Thank you, Julie. Tell us a little bit more about the technology arm and, you know, how big is your team and what are some of the strategic initiatives you've been taking care of? I know you've implemented ambient and, you know, automation and advanced alerting systems, but we'll talk about that a little bit after you answer this question. Thank you.
Sure. So our IT department includes both our technological and our informatics teams, which includes a physician and nursing educators who train our staff on our electronic health record, which is Meditech Expanse. We have a pretty lean team, I would say, with basically, you know, one person who does networking, one person who does telecom. But I'm very fortunate to have a very strong clinical analytics, clinical informatics team who supports and builds our electronic health record and works alongside very engaged clinicians. And we actually meet with our cross-sectional team across the organization for a weekly IT governance meeting to review the request for changes to our electronic health record and talk about changes, kind of identify the best tools, kick requests back to other committees like P&T committee for order sets and things like that. And so we have a really engaged group of people here. So it's a great team to work with. And yes, in the last few years, we've introduced AI documentation and automation and some other things that have really helped us optimize not only our EMR, but our workflow and become more efficient, which is, of course, very important when you have a lean team.
Wow, that sounds like a lot you've accomplished with, you know, such a small team. So that's amazing. I would like to ask you a little bit, you know, about, I listened to some of your other podcasts and things you've talked about, and you've warned about alert fatigue and, you know, workflow disruption. So as AI is now becoming embedded everywhere in healthcare, how do you as a leader help prevent clinicians from becoming cognitively overwhelmed? And we've heard that this is one of the most persistent challenges in clinical decision support. So walk us through what your alert landscape looked like before you started this work. And then, you know, what were clinicians telling you they needed? And how did you like rework this whole landscape?
Sure. So our alerts when we started our EHR in 2022 were kind of turned on in a limited way. I believe they felt like they were doing what was safest by not over alerting people. What they had done instead was really no curation. It really was turn on the very most severe of the alerts, but without any look back. I think the plan had been to really review later, but 2 years went by and that later had never happened. And so there wasn't any analysis of the value of those alerts, or really an analysis of any opportunity of where we really could turn on more alerts. And so we took a look at what was available. We used the LeapFrog guidelines to really identify areas where we weren't alerting. So obviously we had allergies on, for example. We had drug and drug dose alerts on, but we really hadn't cataloged which were on and which were off. And we took the opportunity to do that as far as the severe and moderate severity. We didn't have alerts on for age. So for elderly, for example, we really wanted to be able to turn on the beers list, for example. And we weren't leveraging the tools that we had to really be able to turn on large categories of those alerts. And we had the tool, but nobody wanted to own the decision because turning them on and off, particularly turning them on, and that risk, I think, of upsetting a lot of people by turning on alerts had kind of scared people. So by forming a committee, reviewing those categories, determining which we were going to turn on, and then doing some testing, of course, that committee not only had our pharmacy, our chief medical officer, our informatics team, but physicians from inpatient and outpatient to kind of review the options. We were able to make recommendations, then put them into test for a small group of physicians, and then go live. And what was amazing is that the impact, I think, was more positive than negative. So while initially we did turn on more alerts, we also went around and solicited feedback. You've probably heard me say that you have to go around and solicit feedback. You can't wait for them to call you because they don't have time to call you. And so we got feedback and then we were able to turn alerts off. And those alerts weren't just the new alerts. Some of those alerts were alerts that had been on for 2 years that nobody had ever complained about. And so we were able to turn things off that were nuisance. And as we turned things off, we actually were able to then turn more things on. And it not only highlighted the engagement we got with the physicians, but they started telling us things like, I prescribed this medicine and it didn't give me a warning about this condition. And we were able to get their buy-in for something else, which was the problem list, which is a very common issue in the electronic health record that nobody manages the problem list because nobody thinks it's their responsibility. So it had this secondary benefit of getting buy-in for the problem list so that people wanted to either take things off that were no longer accurate, that were creating alerts because it looked like they had a problem they didn't have anymore, or adding things to the problem list to be sure that it alerted for drug condition or drug disease alerts that it should alert for. So over the course of time, we've been able to turn on more safety triggers while overall reducing the number of alerts that physicians have, which, and we got better buy-in and management of our problem list. So sort of that optimization through subtraction, which is often true, I think, in the electronic health record. We can't just keep adding. We have to really curate what we're doing, but also a lot of engagement, which was fun.
Thank you, Julie, for sharing that, you know, amazing success story. I think that's very instructive for a lot of people that sometimes you need to take things away. We've heard this from other CEOs as well, you know, simplifying the tech stack and not just adding all the time can, you know, make the difference. So I think Rohit joined the call, which is really nice. So Rohit, would you like to ask a question?
Yeah, thank you, Ritu. Hi, Julie. I always think about, you know, innovation and how startups come in and disrupt the status quo, and they're always thinking out of the box. And doing innovation in a large health system usually is difficult, but many health systems now have like infrastructure set up for that. So any thoughts about how you approach innovation in your health system, or you've seen others do it well? Any stories or thoughts around innovation would be great to hear.
Well, I think, you know, there's innovation means so many things to so many people. I think I often say innovation isn't always technology. So the first 2 years I said, I think my title when I got here was Director of Innovation and Transformation. And I think a lot of what I did the first 2 years, I say was free. It wasn't free, but it didn't always include technology. A lot of it didn't. Yeah. A lot of it was really implementing tools that we had that simply hadn't been leveraged yet. And I think that the best description I had for that would be I was mining for opportunities, really revisiting a lot of what we were doing and trying to catalog all of the tools and features that we had in our electronic health record that we hadn't utilized or we hadn't implemented at Go Live. And we hear a lot about optimization of the electronic health record, but I continue to see that people use third parties to add on features rather than utilize what they have. And I just think that cost of losing structured data within your EHR or the cost of implementing and the cost of maintaining an interface and all of those things can't be overemphasized. So I think I'm always looking for ways to leverage what we have internally. I think for innovation as far as AI, particularly for automation, I'm always trying to make sure that the first question I ask, which is probably the same in the electronic health record, is before we build it, should we even be doing it? Because I think we rebuild a lot of workflows or in our electronic health record, and there are a lot of things that are repetitive that seem just like the perfect candidate for automation because they're repetitive that we really shouldn't even be doing. And so before we fix it, so to speak, with automation, which we could, I really want to ensure that it's something that we want to be doing at all. For example, automation is a great fix for faxes, to automatically catalog faxes. I think that that just distracts from the fact that we shouldn't be getting faxes.
Exactly.
Totally agree.
So as much as I really love the solution of reading a fax and cataloging it, I refrained from automating that because I just think that makes us not work towards a solution. And the solution is interoperability. The faxes we get are from our neighboring hospital who has the exact same EHR as us. And there's no reason that we shouldn't be working towards HL7 exchange of data or our exchange or any number of solutions other than the exorbitant amount of time and energy that we spend faxing each other data. And so I just refuse to automate that because it's just so silly. Instead, I really, am trying to focus on complex cross-platform automation that no one is going to solve for us because it's not a single vendor. I think vendors should be creating AI for us to solve their problems. And some should be, like I said, eliminated through interoperability. But I think that anything that we can't rely on a vendor to solve that's repetitive, that is a good candidate. And that's where we've started. In the last 9 months, there has been a lot of automation in our revenue cycle, which has been very successful. Again, not replacing people, but in a lean workforce, any vacancy is magnified, obviously. And automation really helps our humans function on the exceptions, focus on that place where we really need people to either work with our patients or focus on the denials, focus on all of that very specialized work. And now we're actually moving our automation into IT, into provisioning workflows, which I'm super excited about. So we have a fantastic database engineer who created automation for our provisioning, basically through Access kind of database. He has wonderful workflows for our templated employee workflows, basically, that does bring our HR data into IT and for both for Active Directory, for Meditech, for Pixis, for all of those things. It tells us what access they need. But then we need a human to go in and do it. And so if we're able to automate that, he has already built an incredible workflow. And now the automation can build on that workflow to perfect that build and allow our IT team to focus on more direct customer care, those exceptions, and other tasks. So I'm excited about that. And I'm excited about what else we can do with that automation. And then, as you know, we are working towards agentic AI to help take better care of our patients, which I think we've been a little resistant to because we're worried about how patients will respond to agents. But I don't think patients really care if it's a human or a bot. What they care about is getting their needs met. And no response is not acceptable. Right. And so we need to make sure that we're able to meet their needs as quickly as possible. I love that agentic AI can respond to them in the language that they need. I mean, how better can we provide care than being able to speak to them in their language and get them to the right person immediately and not rely on them listening to a phone tree and all of that? I love that. So I'm super excited about that.
So that leads directly into the next question. Julie, you know, rural hospitals are under so much extraordinary financial and operational pressure, but, you know, St. Mary's has continued investing in innovation and patient safety. So just like you're talking about agentic AI, how do you decide, you know, which technologies are truly strategic versus just interesting, especially when, you know, resources are constrained? Tell us a little bit more about your thought process behind that.
Yeah, that's really, I think, been probably the biggest challenge in our hospital, where we're trying to be good stewards of our money and resources are constrained. Obviously, regulatory always comes first. And then those operational needs where, you know, if something breaks, we're going to be paralyzed. But I think that we have accumulated a lot of technological debt in the last several years. And that has been something that we are working really hard to catch up on here. So some of this AI that we have invested in the last few years has been to help us save money that we could then put towards other things. So again, not replacing people, but if we can accelerate AR, we can decrease denials, we can decrease the need for other things through AI. For example, even the ambient documentation for our providers, that helped us get bills out the door sooner. So we've really focused on things that had that kind of ROI that helps us recruit physicians to have some of that technology. So we have really invested so far in technology that helped us financially, that we could kind of show that ROI pretty quickly. That's been important to us. We are pretty nimble, so we can implement those things very quickly. We are just starting to stick our toe into AI that'll actually help more with that clinical documentation and coding in the inpatient world, which I think will be very helpful for things like length of stay and DRG. Again, really trying to focus on the things that will help our financial status, but it is a challenge. And I think the place that we've really struggled is keeping our infrastructure up to date. And that is where, unfortunately, funding is a challenge. I think it's very hard to get grant funding for really what I would say boring the surface stuff like servers and edge switches and top of rack switches, right? That's not something that the average person or senator wants to go to a press conference and say that they purchased for us. But it's what we need. And IT and clinical aren't separate things anymore. They are foundational. And our business continuity relies on us having stable infrastructure. And that's really what we're working on catching up on now.
So one particular success story that, you know, we found out when we were researching St. Mary's was your CPOE rate of more than 95%, which actually surpassed the Leapfrog average for safe medication ordering. So this is like a really meaningful milestone for any health system, let alone a rural independent. So what does success look like in practice, and what one or two changes, cultural or technical, move the needle the most? Because that's what we're seeing with a lot of technology adoption, that it's not just, it's behavioral and it's like a change mindset that you really have to talk to clinicians and get them to adopt the new technologies. So tell us a little bit more about that.
Sure. So I'm a firm believer in data, We really have one data guru, our senior analytic engineer. Her name is Tina O'Hanlon, and she takes the data from our data repository in Meditech and creates very meaningful dashboards in our tool, which is called BCA. And that allows us to present it in a way that transforms care. And it's all about that, right? So, for example, when we are trying to ensure that physicians are putting in their own orders, we are able to look by physician, by time of day. We are able to see which nurses are putting in orders for physicians and why. So we can find those outliers and directly intervene with them. We're able to send those to the medical directors, to the contractor, to the nursing directors. We're able to identify those nurses who are still feeling like they needed to do it. We were already pretty high when we started the Leapfrog journey, but it was very easy to bump it up because those outliers were easy to find. So it was very easy to get them into compliance with the rest of us. We contract with a national group for our ER and our inpatient services. We align with them for those sorts of goals so that their leadership and our leadership are tracking them so they have access to those dashboards so they can see, again, identify those outliers early so that if there's an issue, we can address them. So that data is really important. And that then made it very easy to translate when we were presenting alerts. Again, we need you, the physician, to be putting in your orders so that when you get an alert, you know what it means. If the nurse is putting in the alert, that's not valuable. So really helpful to have that data. And we have data for everything, which is really helpful.
Great. Rohit, would you like to ask a question?
Julie, this data-driven approach is really great. So have you invested in data engineering could you describe us how you went about your setting up your data infrastructure in a way that you were able to leverage it in the fashion that you are describing? Because many people are still kind of trying to deal with that.
Right. Well, so this tool is part of Meditech. So it does have some pre-existing data sets. But of course, Tina can't pull this data unless our amazing clinical analytics staff builds the fields, right? So we work very hard when we are creating new documents or creating new interventions to ask early and often, what are you going to need to track later? And we also have a great quality department who every year people have obviously quality measures, but as they set those measures every July, before they choose the measures, we ask them to please meet with us and tell us what they think they're going to measure before they think they're going to measure something that we can't actually capture. But frequently we are going back and saying, you know, what is it you want to measure and how are we going to capture that data? Where are we going to capture it? So that's a really important relationship, obviously, between the builders and the person capturing the data to make sure that the kinds of fields we're building and the where of that structured data is built correctly with the right kind of data. You know, it's not free text, it's a group response, or that it's the same across all of our documentation. Of course, when we first went live in 2022, there were 20 places that someone might put a PHQ-9 score, and we needed to make it the same across the organization. Yeah. Very simple things like that. But we've worked very hard to be able to capture that, not just for CMS reporting, but just for internal reporting, and then being able to make sure that it's valid because, obviously, not just because the data is important, but because that data integrity is important. And then we formed a data integrity committee about 18 months ago so that as we're pulling data, we document the source of truth, because occasionally it's not BCA. While all data is coming from our EMR, occasionally it is not. For example, a readmission rate that's coming from Medicare or something like that, right? So, or it has to be captured on the same day every month. Something like that, some of those moving targets. So if it's something that has to be defined in a strange way, we do that and we say, you know, this person's going to collect this data at this time, or for example, a Prescani score or something like that. So we really clearly define those metrics so that no matter who's collecting it, it's going to be the same every time. Because as long as that is happening, then people trust the data. But if you have different people, obviously collecting different data points from different sources and then sharing it, then nobody trusts your data at all, and then it becomes meaningless. And so I think that was one of the first things that was important to me when I came here, was people weren't trusting the information that was being shared with them just because it wasn't being pulled in a consistent way. And we've really tightened that up.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So I think very similar question to what Rohit asked, but just frame it in a different way, because he said that a lot of people are not there yet. So for a CIO or a CDIO at, you know, another rural or independent health system who's listening right now, what are one or two pieces of advice you would offer from this journey? And where does this next chapter of digital innovation lead for St. Mary's? You know, what would you tell people who are listening?
Well, I think it's very important not to let your infrastructure get behind, because it's very hard to catch up. So that technological debt compounds very quickly. I think that's something that I've really learned, and that's something that's very important for everybody from the board down to understand that it is a strategic imperative that your infrastructure stay up to date, because everything is growing so fast and taking more memory, and the lead time for hardware is really growing, and the cost is growing very fast. So it's just getting harder to replace devices, and it's getting more expensive. So I think that's an important thing for anybody that's new to ordering all of those things. And then I think the thing that I'm just starting to do in the AI arena is that I think everybody's working on their policies and their governance and all of that. But I think it's really important that we're educating all of our users in their role in AI, because I think, like so much of IT, people think that AI is an IT problem or an IT responsibility. And I'm really trying to frame it as everybody's problem, that just like they use a lab result as a tool, but this has to be looked at critically. And if it looks wrong, you redraw it. You don't give people medication on a result that you don't trust. Or an EKG, again, is a tool. And we don't defibrillate someone who's talking to us just because the EKG looks like a flat line. That we really need to take all of that AI data with a grain of salt. I think it is wonderful for automation and for surfacing data and for aggregating data, because we have so much data that we can't consume it all right now. But I think that we have a lot of users who are a little too reliant on it right now, and they're trusting it too much. They're over-reliant on it, and they're not really understanding the source and the risk. And that's what I think we need more education on for our end users. I don't think they understand the risk at this point. And that's, I guess, my piece of advice for people right now is I think we need more focus on that, even more survey on that. Like, what do your end users know about AI? What is the pathway for them to report unusual behavior, unusual data, or something that's just not working right in their environment? Do they know what to do? Because once it's out of control, it's pretty hard to rein back in.
Great pieces of advice. I think especially the first one, you know, with this pace of innovation now going so fast and, you know, new advances being made every single day, it's so important not to accumulate that technical debt. And like you said, once you fall behind, then catching up gets really hard. So I think that's great advice. As usual, time goes really quick. So Rohit, would you like to ask any closing questions, or Julie, if you have any?
Julie, any closing remarks? Yeah, anything you would like to close in with the listeners?
You know, I think it's not advice. It's just really that we are a small hospital, but we've talked about just a few of the things that we're doing here. But I do think that even with constrained resources, you can do a lot of great things at a small hospital. I'm very appreciative of our vendor partners who don't give up on us, who know we might do things at a small scale, but we're still worth doing things with. And I think that you still can do a lot of powerful things, and that it's really important. We're critical to these communities, and we can provide amazing quality care. And the new LeapFrog scores come out tomorrow. So we're really excited.
Awesome. all the best.
Thank you so much, Julie. Thank you for being on our podcast. Thank you.
Thank you so much.